to go over.
This conference will.
So we decided to take on Double Your Contacts book for our next 2 weeks because I think I heard a lot about it. I met MJ Durkin over the weekend, and I liked his stuff. I liked his presentation, and a lot of presidentials in Manitech are following a lot of the things he's teaching. So, and it's kind of like putting a new look at what how to prospect and how to contact people and those kind of things. And it surely taught me some things and kind of shook my consciousness about a couple of things that I was doing that I might want to do differently. So I thought, well, let's just open this can of worms and take a peek at this, because I know one thing that that we really need is help in the prospecting area. So let's dig in and talk about what Michael has to say in his book, Double Your Contacts. And so let's kick off and take a peek at what I learned as I read this book and of course, what I want to share with you in regards to how it can help you in your business as well. In his first opening chapters, and by the way, we're splitting this into two different weeks because I just knew that I knew I couldn't cover the material and give it adequate coverage if I tried to cover the whole book in 1 week. So next week we'll do Double Your Contacts Part 2. So this will be Double Your Contacts Part 1, and then we'll do Double Your Contacts Part 2. And he kicks off the book by just talking about the belief systems versus techniques, because there are a lot of sales techniques out there, and then there's your belief system, which is more important, and that's a big question he asks right out of the book. And of course, when I read that, I right away go towards beliefs, because I know your inner core of what you believe in and what's important to you and all those things are what really dictate your life. You can learn all the techniques in the world, but if you don't have that core belief, if you got something blocking you, it's going to continue blocking you. In fact, it's one of the reasons why so many of us don't have what we really want in life, because we have inner beliefs that are blocking us from achieving it, whether it's beliefs around money, which is your number, if you want to talk about one number one concept, we have more negative beliefs and wrongful beliefs around than anything else. It's about the word money. So that's really at the core of all of us. But we have a lot of beliefs about everything. Everything in life we have beliefs about, and some of them serve us and some don't. And this is another reason why we heavily promote the Clemmer work is to help and other self-development seminars for you guys. Because the idea is, how do I break those down? If I don't overcome some of the stuff that's been fed to me or that I absorbed as a child, because most of your belief systems you incorporate in your life, they become part of you between the ages of like 3 and 8 years old. So, you know, some of them you didn't even choose. Somebody else chose them for you because it's your environment and the events in your life that cause you to adopt these. Some of them come from your parents. You can look at your parents and you can see that's why you're a reflection of your parents. Well, sometimes my parents were great people. I love them. They gave me a ton. But there were aspects of my parents that weren't necessarily great because no one out there is perfect. And, you know, it took me a while to figure out that maybe my mother's listening skills wasn't something that I really wanted to absorb in my life, right? So we need to shift. We need to shift. Well, we have a lot of beliefs and a lot of baggage around prospecting as well, and contacts, and going out and selling. And he wrote up in his book, he said something to the effect that, you know, if you look at a sales conference and sales convention, everything salespeople want is they want more techniques. In fact, there was a company that put on a lot of these programs, and they wouldn't even agree to take on the convention unless the word close was in the name of the conference. Because they said everybody wants closing techniques, so we're not going to get anyone here. If you talk about beliefs, people aren't going to show up. And there's a lot of truth to that, too, because a lot of us don't acknowledge that part of us. We're not, because we don't have awareness about those limiting beliefs that we have. But what I did today is that, I said, well, let's emphasize working on our belief system. And I attached for you, I took a copy of a couple pages out of his book. I hope he doesn't mind me doing that. But I just attached for you, and of course, I think you all should get his book. I attached for you something called Prospecting Belief Self-Assessment. And the incredible thing about this is it gives you some ideas of some of the beliefs that we carry around prospecting that are really causing us to be terrible prospectors, or we're just not effective at it, or we're not doing a good job at it. And I think it's important for you to read through some of these. As I was reading through them, I recognized them because why do I recognize some of these? Because I hear them from associates in my downline. You know, I like everything about the business except for prospecting. Wow. The belief. I don't have time to prospect and do it right. What a belief. I don't have time to be bothered at night on the phone, and I don't like to bother others. Isn't that incredible? But how many of you have these? Just look through this list. I don't like having to call my friends. I feel like I'm interrupting people when I call. I don't want to look foolish or stupid if they say no. I need people to like me and approve of me. I'm afraid that if they give me an objection I can't handle, I'll look dumb. I can't think of anyone who would be interested. It's rude to call people at night and interrupt their relaxation time. Look, all of these are just beliefs that you have, that you've chosen, or that were subjectively given to you at a time in your life, and maybe you didn't even choose them, but you can't go victim to somebody else because you're choosing them now. Because if you have them, you're choosing them. So how do we overcome these belief systems? Because if you have any of these on this sheet that you can read through, page 6 and 7, out of his book, if you have any of those going on for you, I'm going to suggest that's holding you back. That's stopping you from being effective doing Man Attack and just freezing you in your business. So if you take a look at all these, can you come up with techniques that would help you overcome them? Well, you could. I mean, there's a way, you know, that you can overcome negative beliefs and compromising beliefs in your life by techniques. But the problem with developing a technique and just doing it is that you'd have to do it over and over and over and over and over and over again. You'd have massive repetitive behavior before you're going to achieve positive results. And that takes a lot of time and a lot of frustration. And most people don't have the perseverance to do all of that. So MJ Durkin says that, you know, really in effect, no technique will overcome negative beliefs unless you go through that horrific process. So why not try to get over the negative beliefs without techniques? In other words, come up with a strategy on how I can get over my negative beliefs in a more positive way in a shorter, briefer period of time. And that's truly what Clemmer is all about, too. He's about creating a substantial amount of change in a very short period of time. Because repetition is one way you can create change. Another way you can create change is emotional involvement. So understanding the price you pay, so you can emotionally attach yourself to what these are costing you. And that's why on page 6 and 7 in his book, he's put down, what are these belief systems actually costing you on a daily basis? And you start tabulating what you're losing, and it really becomes an aha moment that you're losing a lot because of these limiting beliefs that you're carrying forward. So he suggests that if you look on that list, and you can go through that page 6 and 7 attached to the outline, and you can just circle the ones that are most impactful for you. Some of you might circle 10 of them because they might apply to you. But take the ones that are really dragging you down, the ones that are having the most impact on stopping you and freezing you and costing you the most money in your Manatech business. And then develop a statement around them and rewrite them. So what would that look like? What that would look like is, let's take the one that says, I don't like having to call my friends. Well, how would you rewrite that? I absolutely enjoy and am overwhelmed when I get a chance to talk to my friends. I feel like I'm interrupting people when I call. How can I rewrite that? I can't wait to call people because I know they can't wait to hear from me. Just rewrite it. Your program is wrong. Your program is off. Your program is something you've adopted because it somehow saves you in a comfort zone. Well, wrong. You're going to stick in that comfort zone and you're going to be very uncomfortable there the rest of your life because you're never going to get what you want in life. So redraft your limiting beliefs and restate them as affirmations. Put them on a 3x5 card and carry them around with you every day. Wake up in the morning and read them. Carry them in your car with you and read them. And just reprogram that silly limiting belief that you have because it's costing you a ton of money. Costing you a ton of money. So grab onto that. I thought that was a huge piece, and I think a lot of us need to recognize that, and we need to, but not just acknowledge it, because some of you are saying, well, Mary Jo, I always knew that, and I go, great, but what have you done about it? And that's where you fall off the horse, right? You've known it, but you're not doing anything about it. So let's work on our belief system, because truly, when you got to bust through those before any techniques will layer on top. So techniques reinforce beliefs. How strong are yours? So you got to look at techniques can reinforce your beliefs, so the techniques you develop will help you reinforce your beliefs. It's a funny thing. Work together. Intriguing how having strong beliefs supports you executing your techniques, but having great techniques will help increase your belief system. So how do I build confidence? By continuing to do my techniques. By that will reinforce me. So he talks about the cornerstone of selling in his book, four areas. Number one, belief systems come first. So you got to lay the core foundational belief system. It's why you need to tackle these negative beliefs around prospecting. It's why you need to go to Clemmer. It's why you need to knock all this stuff out of you, because if you don't have clarity and you're not moving forward with a clean slate, you're not moving forward at all. So beliefs come first. The cornerstone of selling, so beliefs is first. Second is techniques. And techniques you got to develop. You got to be willing to risk, fail, and ask for help. You got to be willing to go out and stumble, and you're going to fall on your face. You're going to fall flat on your face over and over again. But you know what? You get back up, and you start all over, and you get new information, and you learn lessons from all the ways that you've fallen. So you just keep green and growing, and you keep executing. You develop strategies, and you take action. And that's basically what he calls the cornerstone of selling. In his third chapter, he gets into you're not in the business that you think you're in. And I thought this was kind of intriguing. Oh, I think, what did I do? I'm sorry. I think I wrote another page. I copied something else on the back of, I'm sorry. Let me go over the prospecting techniques as well. When we talk about techniques, I put another page. I copied page 11 and 12 out of his book for you on techniques. And I think that had more to do with, chapter 2 on your prospecting techniques. So it's a self-assessment form. And that's another one you need to look at and say, you know, where am I in terms of my techniques in my approach to prospecting? You know, am I not getting enough referrals from people who don't get in? Am I inconsistent in my prospecting behavior? Some of you, actually, when I started reading through this, I know a lot of people would check probably 90% of these. But these are areas that you need to work on. And one of the things that we're building in the new system that Al Bao is putting together is consistency of behavior. Consistency of behavior. I mean, that's how you create results. That's how you create momentum. You adopt a certain behavior and you're consistent with it. Day in, day out, day in, day out. Nothing falls in your way. There's nothing that stops you because it becomes a priority in your life if you choose it as a priority. But again, we have to look at, are we choosing things as priorities in our life, or are we just going to live life by chance and circumstance? That's a choice we make. I believe in living, that's one of my favorite sayings, is I believe live life by choice and commitment instead of chance and circumstance. But it's a choice you make. Because we can let life control us, or we can take control of our life. It's a choice. It's just a choice. And you can have all the excuses and reasons in the world, and you can live by that, or you can choose different. And you can choose to be personally responsible for your life and then take the steps that create the results. And we know that consistent, persistent behavior creates incredible results. So grab onto that list of prospecting techniques that's attached to your outline, page 11 and 12, and just look at it and say, where is it that I'm falling back? What am I not doing? And build a plan that incorporates these techniques into your life so that you follow them day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out. And that will help you be phenomenally successful at doing network marketing, because those are the techniques that are required to be effective in networking and creating the results that you want to create. All right, so that takes care of his chapter 2. Very important. Go through those. Learn them. Develop them. Grab onto them. All right, and make them a part of your life. Now, in Chapter 3, he talked about you're not in the business that you think you're in. What business are you in? And that's a big question. You know, when people ask the question of network marketing, they say, what business do you think you are? And they go, network marketing business, or I'm in the people business, or I'm in the duplication of your own efforts business, or I'm in independent business owner. Or I'm in, you know, the wealth creation business. You know, everybody has different things. And none of these are necessarily bad answers, but the reality of it is that if you're in network marketing, you are in the prospecting business. That is your business. It starts there, it ends there. That's it. And it's real cute because Durkin in his book, he goes, I'm sorry, but somebody had to tell you. The cat's now out of the bag. You're in the prospecting business. If somebody didn't tell you this when they got you involved, he's sorry. But that's what network marketing it is. It's about the contact. commitment, contacts, communication, relationships. That's what this business is. And so if you're in the business, we need to be what? Committed to doing what? So keeping daily prospecting on our list every day, every day. It starts and ends, it, notices it, he says, all starts and ends with prospecting. So whatever's keeping you busy, you're not in the business without doing daily prospecting. And he's developed around it. He's come up with, I think he had 18 rules. What was the total we came up with? Yeah, 18 rules. So we're going to go over his 18 rules today, and which goes through all the way through Chapter 5, and that's going to take us through the first half of his book. So we're going to talk about these different rules that he's developed in terms of a prospecting business and some of the what should we say, tragic flaws. He kind of pulls that out of Greek mythology and stuff, tragic flaws that people have, and we're going to deal with those and grapple with those as well. So let's jump in and talk about what are those rules of network marketing. And you want to first really get clear. Now, rule number one is what we just suggested. You are in the prospecting business. That's rule one, and don't ever forget it, because we get confused sometimes. We think we're in, what kind of business do we think we're in? We think we're in the internet business. We think we're in the teaching business or products business or in the business of dreaming or in the business of booking appointments. And, what is our business? And in the course of a given day, you might do a lot of these events, but the problem is you're missing out on the number one, which is prospecting. It's like being in people's faces, talking to people, getting contacts, meeting new people, and coming using leads, whatever way method you do, you're in the prospecting business. And Lydia was so funny. She said, okay, we're going to go see our neighbor. So the minute we got home from boot camp, we went to our next door neighbors, who we talked to before, but we never gave a presentation to. So we were right in their kitchen doing a presentation Sunday afternoon, right out in the day. So Lydia got pretty fired up on the boot camp too. But the idea is that that's our business. We're in the prospecting business. So now she's got on my schedule every day. She's just locking out time that you, Mary Jo's got a prospect. Blah, blah, blah. It's really cute. And she's right. It's we get lazy about it. And it's a little bit out of our comfort zone, and we clearly can find 100 and other things not to do. I mean, 101 things to do instead of prospecting. But prospecting is our business. That is what we're in. So acknowledge it, accept it, and take it on. Okay, these are rules. And when he defines his rules, when he says these are rules, people, he's saying a rule defined by Webster is a fixed principle that determines conduct, behavior, or habit. And so that's why he put these rules out, because he's saying these are fixed principles that work in networking. So allow them to define your behavior, your conduct, or your habits. You are in the process. Don't forget it, okay? So that's number one. The second rule that he came up with is you must get face-to-face with a steady stream of qualified prospects. In other words, you can't be doing this hit-and-miss. It must be a steady flow, which means you can't stop and start. You don't want to be inconsistent. You want to be face-to-face with a steady stream of different prospects. So make sure that it always becomes a part of your day. I remember some people we had in a coaching group one time, and they said, well, this week I'm not going to prospect because I'm in so much follow-up from last week. And I started laughing, and they said, why are you laughing, Mary Jo? I said, well, if that's the approach to business, what are you going to be doing next week? You won't have anyone to follow up with because you didn't do any prospecting. And they started thinking about it, and they started laughing with me instead of feeling like they're on the defensive. They thought, well, that's really kind of smart because, yeah, I could close these people, and then the next week I have no activity, I got to say. So it's the concept of if you keep prospecting every week, then you'll keep in the flow. Every week you'll be prospecting. Every week you'll be doing follow-up. Every week you'll be doing new trainings. I mean, it's just a concept that's part of who you are. But prospecting is your business. So make sure you're face-to-face with a steady stream of qualified prospects. Now, some of you might say, well, face-to-face, I do a lot of social networking, so I don't get face-to-face with people. That's a choice, but it's also prospecting. So important for you to do that. My preference is always face-to-face because I really believe that gives me the best ability to let them know about my heart, and that's what this business is about. You're selling people based on your heart. They don't care what you know as much as they want to know how much you care, and that's critical. So that's rule number two. Rule number three is you must master the art of contacting and booking appointments by phone. In other words, you have to own it. And so many of us are not good at that because the phone weighs thousands of pounds and we don't want to get on the phone and we come up with all sorts of excuses why the phone doesn't work. And, you know, if you do all of this and you fail to understand how to contact and book appointments by phone, you're still going to fail. So you need to get committed. You need to be very committed. And commitment in a Webster definition is a pledge or promise to do something, a dedication to a long-term course of action. So we need to be committed to these rules. We need to be committed to, you know, mastering our phone contacting. And that takes, what does it take to do that? In order to master phone contact is repetition. You do it over and over again, and you do it until you get good at it, because you will get good at it. And it doesn't matter if this is why I love sometimes asking people to buy leads, because I think it helps them master the art of contacting and booking appointments by phone. It gives you a real opportunity. If this is the first time you're looking at this and the first time you're reviewing Durkin's book and maybe you want to get it and really read it and apply it to your life, I'm going to suggest that's what you want to do. Buy some contacts, cheap ones, and just spend, you know, buy like 150 of them. And just, you know, spend a week just contacting those people and getting very comfortable on the phone. And don't get tied into the results you create, because those leads programs you typically create very many, but it's going to at least allow you to get more perfection in your ability to communicate on the phone, contacting people, and feeling more familiar with it and more comfortable with it. Even though it may not produce any results for you, it's going to give you the practice, 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 practice. You'd rather practice on people you don't know than people you do know, so that's a way to do that. And just see the languaging you use and start working through that, what works for you, okay? So that's rule number three. Master the art of contacting and booking appointments. You have to own it. Rule number four, he talks about stop predicting and start approaching. And in this rule, he talks about the three different kinds of networkers that exist out there, and we all fit in one of these three things. He says we fit in... We're either a farmer, a sharecropper, or a hunter, but we can also be all three. But what are these three different types of network marketers? Well, the farmer is, by definition, plants the seeds and then nurtures them until they grow into crops that can be harvested. So that might sound like you, that you're a farmer in your approach to network marketing, in that you love to talk to people and you might have four or five conversations with them before you even bring up Manatech, and then you might take them to a meeting a couple weeks later, and then you might send them some more materials. And, you know, so it's kind of like a farmer in that you sow seeds all the time, and eventually you're prayerful that those seeds will, what, grow a crop, and you'll be able to harvest the crop. And that's what a farmer's called. Now, that's great, a way to do networking because you're building relationships, but what's the downside of it? The downside of being a farmer or teaching farmer ways of doing this business is that most people who get involved in the business, if it takes them a long time to sponsor their very first person or their very first group of six, their team, what's going to happen to their belief level? Their belief level is going to drop to the floor. So the idea is to try to teach somebody to build a business this way is going to be teaching them how to fail, because you're immediately going to be impacting their belief system on whether or not this is going to work. So although farmers got its value, it's a problem if that's the way you're training and teaching people to behave. The second one is called the sharecropper. And the sharecropper, Webster defines a sharecropper as someone who rents land from the landlord, farmer, and pays a portion of the crop as rent. So the network marketer, the analogy in network marketing, is a person who likes to have leads handed to them. They're usually effective at getting appointments set up for them, but they'd rather rely on other people to supply their leads or appointments. And some of you are in that realm. You're a sharecropper. You want somebody else to always give you the leads, and then you're good at getting appointments done, but you don't want to go out and find the leads yourself. The problem with that, of course, is that, first of all, the good side of a sharecropper, usually they're pretty good at booking appointments and following up with it. But the bad side is they're not self-sufficient. If they don't have leads, they don't do anything. And some of you can look at that and say, God, that kind of sounds like me. If I don't have leads, I don't do anything. I wait till leads come to me. It's kind of like some people get involved in this business and say, well, you know, Mary Jo, I'm just going to let the Lord choose to bring whoever he wants to in my life that he wants me to help. And I just find that really fascinating because it's not very consistent with my scripture. I mean, the Lord didn't ask you to only evangelize the people he brings to you, to your house, as you're sitting at home. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just kind of, but we use it kind of as an excuse not to move forward. And I think what we need to do is we need to get out of excuses and reasons why not and start talking about reasons why. So a sharecropper can be effective that you're good with other people's leads. You know, you love it when you're a downline, you know, you sit back and you wait, oh, just do a three-way call with me. Let me help you with three-way calls. Oh, you know, like, why don't you call some referrals and then let's work together. I'll help you. Well, that's great, but you're not prospecting. You're forgetting what business you're in. And let me tell you, Al Bala was all over that group of presidentials this weekend about, what are you guys doing? I mean, if you're going to be a leader, what's the number one way you lead people? You lead people by example. And one of my presidentials underneath me looked at me and he said, you know, Mary Jo, I'd really like to know I'd like to know each month how many people you're enrolling. And I thought that was fascinating. That was the first time any of mine downline asked me that question. So I'm going to make it a point on a monthly basis. I'm going to put out a publication on how many people I enrolled that month, every single month, just to give people a standard. If they want to see what Mary Jo's doing, here's the, you know I'm busy, but I could be busy doing webinars and seminars, and, of course, I'm busy doing that Monday calls. But the idea is that no one in my downline knows how many Mary Jo enrolled. They know how many people, you know, other people in their downline enroll, but they don't know what their upline's doing. So what an interesting scenario. So I thought, what a great idea. So I'm going to put an upline report that goes out. And not to brag or boast or anything, because I'm sure there's some months that I'm not going to look really good, but the idea is to just to give them a standard that if I'm leading, I need to lead by example. And that means I need to be out there, you know, enrolling people as well every single month. So a sharecropper is that. And the third one is what we call the hunter. And what is a hunter? A hunter, what does a hunter do? They leave in the morning, go out in the field, and come home with dinner that night. A hunter is completely self-sufficient. They can create business out of literally nothing. They have what I call built-in, what M.J. Durkin calls built-in prospecting consciousness. It's kind of like if you've ever been around Ray Robbins, he is the supreme hunter. I may think I'm a hunter, but I'm nothing compared to Ray Robbins. You can't go through an airport with Ray Robbins without him talking to at least a half dozen people about health and wellness and wealth. I mean, it's just automatic. It comes out of his mouth no matter who he's with, no matter who he's around, whether he's ordering a Subway sandwich or he's going through security check. I mean, it's incredible to watch this guy operate. If you've ever around him or travel with him, you'll see what I mean. It's endless. He's always, always getting people involved in the business at every opportunity. It's endless how many contacts he has. And one of the reasons you want to do this, you want to be out there, well, first of all, you say, well, which one do you want to be? The reality is there's value in all three. There's value in a farmer, there's value in a sharecropper, and there's value in a hunter. But the critical part of it is that we all need to vie towards being more of a hunter than sharecropper and farmer. They all have value, but if you stay a farmer, you're not going to be a very good leader and you're not going to grow your business. And you're not going to help, you're not going to bring on barn burster business builders that you've always wanted in your life because you're going to burn them out by this whole concept of slow pace. Sharecropper, you're going to be at victim to whatever anyone else brings to you because you're not self-sufficient. And as a hunter, of course, there you have self-sufficiency. And the other thing he brings up in Rule 4, he talked about, well, he really, and it got into Rule 5 as well, but one of the tragic flaws in network marketing is they think they can psychically determine whether someone would be good at the business or be interested or not. And he gave us some statistics in the book. I'll just give you some of those out of his book in terms of when you approach people. And the approach statistics look like this. Here's the statistical facts. 36% of the people have given up on having a better life and don't believe that they will ever have more than a 5% increase in their income each year. So do you think you're going to get those people to come on board? Of course not, because they've given up on having a better life. 36% of the people have given up on having a better life. and they believe their income will only go up by 5% increase on an annual basis at most. 10% of all people are lazy. They don't like to work and try to do as little as possible just to get by. How many of you have heard that in a lead, when you purchase leads, and they go, well, I really don't want to work, I just want to make money. I mean, I hear people actually say that to me. I kind of look at them and I go, okay, then this isn't for you. Next. 17% of all people will look at an opportunity just to prove it wrong and make themselves feel better that they were right. Boy, they're really into I need to be right mode, big time. Get it? 17%. 3% have tried network marketing business and failed. They know, quote unquote, those businesses just don't work. 4% of the people make over $250,000 per year and feel that they're doing okay. Okay, so what does this mean? I just gave you these statistics. That means 70% of the people you approach are not going to be seriously looking for something and wouldn't even believe it if they saw something good. So that leaves you with 30% of the population. So this gets into how can you be a big good predictor or psychically determine whether somebody's interested or not? But I give you these statistics not from the perspective of you to go, oh my gosh, I just made my list, Mary Jo, and now I'm depressed because you're telling me 70% won't be interested. It's not about that. It doesn't mean you should be pessimistic about the people on your list. You absolutely must think positive and hold the vision that they will get in. You just need to be realistic about when you get no's. When people say no to you, it's just, okay, next. It gives you such phenomenal freedom. Because when I went and presented to my next door neighbors, they were really excited. They couldn't wait to look up the Oceline and the products. I gave them some stuff, and I said, great. I said, let's get back in touch early this week, maybe by Wednesday. Is that good for you? And I said, and we'll talk some more. And I said, and if you want to look at the business, great. It's up to you. I said, I love it. I'm your next door neighbor. We'd be great being partners together, but it's got to be a fit, and I don't want you doing something that's not a fit. I mean, it was like, I wasn't out there being a salesman. I was out there doing what? I was out there building a relationship and letting them, if you don't want it, hey, next, because maybe you're in that 70%. Maybe you think your life is perfect. All right, so that's really important that to understand that rule. The rule number 5 is your friends, relatives, neighbors, and work associates provide a valuable service by testing you. And what he means by this, well, I better hurry up. I don't have a lot of time. Sorry, guys. This is good, such good material. What he's saying here is that don't misread the reactions of your friends and relatives. You need to look at the statistics again. When I say look at the sheet, that means the stats I just gave you about, 70% of the people aren't going to be interested because they have all this other stuff going on. You just got to be aware of that. So don't misread their reactions. The important thing is that they're invaluable because however they react, you're going to have learn a lesson from them. So you learn and grow from them. And he also brought up the idea, and this is huge for me because I miss excitement and enthusiasm virtually all the time. And he said the tragic flaw is when you think your excitement and enthusiasm rub off on a prospect. What he's doing is he's saying your enthusiasm and your excitement needs not to come when you first meet somebody, like in an airport or at the grocery store or at the post office. When you meet somebody for the first time, he says when you come across so enthusiastic, people just look at you and like going, this is another one of those sales things. They're going to see right through you. And I think he's got some validity to that, that they kind of can see right through all that because this is a little crazy. Some people see my energy and they kind of run the other direction, but there's not much you can do about that. I'm going to have my energy. But in terms of the enthusiasm, he's kind of like saying temper that when you first meet somebody so they can handle you and they don't come to conclusions about what you're all about, that you're just trying to sell them something. He says, use your enthusiasm when you present at an opportunity meeting or a presentation and they can see your passion for what you're doing at that time. So it was an intriguing concept because he says that kind of enthusiasm when contacting or booking an appointment, some of you get so giddy and, oh, good, oh, great, oh, yeah, great, and people are going, they're going the other direction on us, and we don't realize that. So maybe try that out. I'm implementing that because that was a great aha for me. I never thought of it that way, so it's something new and different. So I suggest you take it on. That's rule 6. In other words, never use that enthusiasm in booking an appointment. Use it for opportunity meetings or seminars so that they can see the passion at that time. Number 7, never use buzzwords. third tragic flaw is you're using buzzwords. Like, we're excited. My husband and I, I got into the business. I wanted to show you an opportunity. Home-based, upline. He said, these are buzzwords. He says, stay away from these buzzwords when you initially contact somebody. It can immediately set them into, oh, my gosh, network marketing, I want nothing to do with it, and they won't even listen to you down the road. Some people say, well, Mary Jo, they're not going to be interested in network marketing. Well, they might be if they don't feel this network marketing push on top of them right out of the gate. So give yourself a chance to get them interested in hearing from you first. And that's kind of what we saw in natural selling with Michael Oliver when we talked about, he says, when people talk about different things, you go, you know what, I know there's a reason and a purpose for us meeting each other today, and it may be that what I'm doing is a solution to what you're talking about, your issue and your need. And I'd love to sit down and talk to you about it if you have some interest in that. So they don't know what I'm doing. I keep it quiet. I'm not jumping into it and telling them everything that I'm doing. You know, so it's an intriguing thing. So you keep it hidden and you keep that enthusiasm, but you keep away from the buzzwords. I don't want to talk about, we have a meeting every month, you're on the ground floor opportunity, you need to meet this guy, he's super rich. You don't want to get into all that stuff. Rule number 8, if you want to be treated like all other network marketers, then walk, talk, and smell like all those other network marketers. So again, understand that people can dump a lot of venom on you if you come across network marketing. Because they might have had a bad experience, they might have some reservations about it, and you're going to get all the dumping. And when you get all the dumping, what happens is it robs from your belief, typically, and you don't want that to happen to you or to people in your organization. So just be natural, and that's how MJ Durkin talks about it. Just kind of be natural. This is just about truth. Come from truth and be natural. We have the best comp plan. Oh, throw up. I mean, it's just be natural. Love on people, be natural, be there to support them and serve them. And the 9th rule was people want things they can't have. So it's intriguing. A lot of times when we go out and we reach out to people, we act very needy or we really come across like we're trying to get them involved in something. And what happens is you cause an immediate front. People immediately get defensive about it. Because people are more apt to want something they can't have. It's kind of like in a closing technique. Remember the famous closing technique of take it away from them? And then they come after you. So I love it when I look at people and I say, you know, this isn't for everybody, and it could be, it's just not for you. So I just thank you for spending some time with me, and I'll, you know, move on and find a new business partner elsewhere. And they go, well, what do you mean? And then they get really frustrated because you've taken it away. And that's very true. The psychology of people is that we want things we can't have. In his 4th chapter, MJ gets into maintaining strong posture that attracts people to you. So examine the process of interviewing for a job. Who's in control? Learn from this. When you talk to people, posture is everything. This is critical, people. You want stop looking at this as your next greatest business partner. In other words, when you look at somebody, and a lot of times I told you guys, when I start talking to people, sometimes I already have them signed up in my downline, but that's just my brain that's doing that. But I'm not. I don't have to have them, but my brain, because I know that I can do this. It's my confidence level. But that's not, because it doesn't come out in my language. My confidence level about them being in my business doesn't come out. My confidence level in what I'm doing and how great it is comes out in my communication style. So what you want to do is you want to make sure you're not feeling like you need them and they have to become a part of your business. And blah, 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 because you know what? People get turned out to that. I met this one guy a couple weeks ago, and I thought, oh, my gosh, he'd be perfect for my business. Oh. So I wrote him an email. I said, hey, I'd like you to get on this call. And I didn't hear from him, and then he called back, and he left a message that he didn't get on or something. And I wrote back, and I said, you know what? This business really, it's a great business. I love it, and I've done so extremely well on it, but it really isn't for everybody. And let me know, because I really, want to serve you. And boom, right back, what did I get back? So, again, it's not for everybody. Da, da, da. So just take that attitude. It's great. Part 2 of his book gets into techniques, strategies, and activities. He talks about cold contacts, ninja-type behavior, and he says there's distinct stages of contacting people. Now, this is called initial contact, right? So you have the initial contact that you first contact somebody. So that might be like, hey, how's the weather, or something like that, right? Initial contact would be you run into somebody, and then observation contact would be putting some language out there in the observation mode then you get into name exchange, then you get reason for information, and then you set up a recontact time. So here's his five-step process, and that's what he gets into in the next group of rules, and we'll get more into this next week as well. But it's a mechanism that he uses, and Deb Jones is great this weekend. She said she loves it. She'll go out and she'll just run into somebody, and she'll say, oh, my gosh, how do you like this crazy weather? And then, she goes from that mode, that's her observation contact. It's just a question you throw out there that starts a conversation. And then as the conversation goes on, which it typically brings, she'll wait for a pregnant pause, and then she'll say, by the way, my name's Deb Jones, and you are? And that's how you get the person's name. And you are? Or you introduce yourself. Oh, by the way, my name's Deb Jones, and you start shaking their hand. If they don't say their name, because that's a normal reaction, you can say, and you are? So you can give them time before you say, and you are, so it doesn't sound as pushy. But all of this is important technique. And then what is the next one is name exchange. And then he gets into, and then he goes through all these rules. Rules 10 is every person you meet in the course of your day deserves to know what you know. So don't try to hide things from people. It's not about hiding. It's about, being surreptitious or, sleazy or kind of looking like, funny eye contact or all that kind of stuff. And MJ Durkin said, when people talk to you, you want to stare them in the eyes. When you're talking to them, you want to break that up because you don't want to put the pressure on them to continue looking in your eyes. So when you're talking to them, you can look around a little bit to give them some relief. But when they're talking to you, you always make eye-to-eye contact. That was a great point he made. So you're out there, you're meeting people, you're getting into contacts. You do not have to get the name and number of everyone you meet, just get good at meeting people. That's rule 11. That's kind of the start off. He says, you want to start practicing that, then go out for 3 days and, go out and just meet people. You don't have to get their name. Just kind of go out and do it. Just do it, because some of you are just really bad at breaking the ice. You don't even know how to meet somebody. You don't even know how do I start a conversation? And it's so out of your comfort zone that you don't do it. You need to start doing it. So put it upon yourself, and I do this with some of my upstart people. I say, what I want you to do? I want you to go out and talk to 5 new people today and just find out information about them. So I get them to just go out and play Sherlock Holmes and ask lots of questions. I don't want a Manatech to come up. It might if they happen to ask you what you do and you want to share a little bit, but I said it's not about Manatech. It's about you just getting comfortable. So that's a great exercise, and he put that in Rule 12. Be observant and look for an opening statement to start a conversation. You can always say something to get someone to respond. And that's the, how do you like this weather? Or, hey, I really like that tie you got on. Where did you get that? You can always come up with something to get a conversation going, always. If you don't know how to do that, then spend the next couple days doing it with everyone you come across. Practice, practice, practice. It is very effective. So once you get good at that, your observation contact and being able to talk to people, just anyone you meet anywhere, then the next thing is your goal becomes when you contact them, now your goal is the name and email or phone number and a reason to call them back. You don't want to get into a presentation. It's not about qualifying or disqualifying people. That's why MJ says what your goal is just collect information. Collect their card, get their information, and you're going to ask them, oh, by the way, John, do you have a business card? And you get their business card. If they ask for your business card, he actually says in Rule 18, you're going to see, he says, don't give them one. For some reason, you've run out. You want to have control over the relationship. Now, I don't know if that's really out there, too, for me, but that's what he says. He says, so I'm going to try it. I'm going to go out there and, I never liked people handing out business cards anyway. I says your whole objective in network marketing is to collect the other person's information so you stay in control of what? The relationship. So collect their information. You get their name. It helps when you contact them because you want to have their name. When you finally call up, you want to say, Sarah, how are you? This is Mary Jo. We met the other day. Remember? Da-da-da-da-da, right? So you want to make sure that you're getting their name. Rule 15 is your job is to get information, not give it. So you're under no obligations to answer any of their questions. You maintain control. You're the one that's asking the questions. You're getting information from them. And Rule 16 is do not allow yourself to be cornered. Start with the reason for info stage just as you feel the interchange is going to end. So in other words, don't get cornered into getting into Manatech talk before it's in a premature way. Because if you start, you go, oh, my name's Mary Jo, and what's yours? Just, oh, you know what I do? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and I take over it. Now I'm just pushy. I'm going to be pushy, a salesman, all that kind of stuff. Remember how Michael Oliver did it. He waited until he heard a need, and he goes, you know what? I just know God has us meeting each other today because what I do might be a perfect solution for the problem you just brought up. So if you'd like to talk, get together, let's do that. See, it's the same thing. This is similar to that. The same idea that what you do becomes what? A side effect of the conversation, not the conversation, but a side effect of the conversation, whatever that conversation is. And if you ask for their information and they say, you know what, I'd really like to reconnect with you, and they're asking you why, you go, well, I'm involved in a business that really is about people sharing with each other. And the interchange is so critical for us in terms of our growth and helping this economy get turned around, so I'd love to share more information with you. Now, how does that sound? Do any of you have any idea what my business is? No. And that's what he kind of suggests. He says, I'm involved in an internet program that helps people. You know how many people are trying to sell things on the internet today? Well, my goodness, it's an incredible mire out there, and I help people understand and learn how to connect on the internet and help market on the internet. And I'd love to give you some information about that. Get it? So he makes it so it's not about the product, your Manatech, your company, but it makes it in a nondescript way, so it's not something that they have any real information on until the next contact. So don't get cornered. Have a rehearsed answer that describes your business again in a nondescript way. So it's not, oh, I'm in Manatech and we do network marketing and we like to market products that are nutritional support systems for your overall wellness. That's not what he's saying. Okay? He's saying, oh, I say, and I had some examples. Let me go to the page to just give you some. I think they were kind of like what I said, but let me do that again. Page 50 in his book, he's got some examples of that. And he says, like this one, when he says, well, what kind of business is it or what do you do? You go, let me answer your question with a question. Have you ever thought to yourself, boy, there's all these people making money selling products and services using the internet, and I wish I could figure out how to cash in on that? So that you ask a question, answer a question with a question, and they'd probably say, yeah, I've heard of that. Well, I have some partners with whom I help people with business ideas market them using the internet. That's what we do. So you have a reason why, what, but you want to have that script. You want to have a rehearsed answer that describes your business, but without getting into all the what, all the nitty-gritty of every aspect of it. So keep it simple. And then, again, of course, get their business card. Don't necessarily give them yours. It's about you collecting the data, not getting it from them. Oh, okay, people, I think we went over, but that's great. That's the first five chapters of his book. Next week we'll go over the rest. But don't forget to look at booking your way to Chicago, getting involved in our webinar, which is Saturday, which I know you'll find invaluable for your business, and being on our new one tonight. If you feel led to bring some prospects on that, that's great. I hope to have you there. And I love you all, and let's kick off the new Manatech. Bye, everybody.